This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Those of you listening on AM 690, welcome, and on the FM at 106.5, glad to have you alongside. For the next 2 hours, we talk about the Jaguars, the National Football League, and professional football in general. Brian Sexton, along with Vic Ketchman, the senior editor of Jaguars.com, Jeff Lagerman, my broadcast partner, and Joe Fortunato, who is waving feverishly, making sure that you're happy tonight, Vic, with your volume in your headset. Does it work?
I'm very happy.
Are you?
I'm very happy.
All right, so I was sitting...
Took a pill. Took a pill, about 15 minutes. It's about the time they...
Are you saving them for Wednesdays only?
Wednesdays, and of course, I'll have many this weekend because that's a long flight. It don't require many pills.
It is a very long flight. What is it, 5.5 hours?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine, though, being in the position that you are now for the Seahawks, where they log, you know, in excess of 29,000 miles on an annual basis?
I mean,
that's tremendous.
Did you see this? The Seahawks this year will travel 295 miles more than the Steelers, Browns, and Colts combined.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And those teams in the Northeast, they're really fortunate. They make these 20-minute flights, you know, all the time. But I'll tell you something. It's actually a longer flight. This is, you know, information that nobody wants to hear, but what the heck, I'll try. People might want to hear this. It's actually a longer flight coming from the going from the Northeast to Seattle than it is diagonally from Florida to Seattle, and I'll tell you why. When you travel across the United States east to west, from the, across the northern tier,
sure,
you can't fly direct.
Because the big airport's in the way.
I guess. You have to fly. They take you up almost to Hudson Bay, straight up, and then you turn left. And you go out all the way over Canada, the Canadian Rockies and everything. It is brutally long flying to Seattle from the Northeast. Hmm. Coming back, it's straight. It's a straight shot coming back, and you got that nice west, you know, tailwind.
Pushing the whole way.
Pushing the whole way. It's like 4 hours coming back, but it's like six and a half going out.
So will we not age as we're moving fast through the air?
You know,
kind of like time travel?
I just never understood the whole concept. I mean, why not just go straight up and stay there and let
the Earth rotate?
Yeah, come under you. Wait till Seattle gets here.
Since you say that, did you ever read the book? And Bob Costas tells the story, Loose Balls, about the ABA. Remember the old ABA where Julius Erving got his start?
Uh-huh.
There was a team in St. Louis.
That was the multicolored basketball.
Yeah, right.
That's about all I know about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Bob Costas tells the story about time travel and flight because they were at the airport in St. Louis, and they were flying to, I think it was somewhere in Kentucky. There was a time change involved.
Sure.
And he was with Marvin Barnes, who was a big, very colorful forward back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, okay. True nut job.
So basically what Marvin saw them leaving St. Louis at 8 o'clock and arriving wherever they were going, right, an hour. Got to get this right now. Basically, he saw them as skipping an hour somewhere, and he said, man, there was no time travel involved in my contract. He didn't, you know, he just, yeah. I don't know whether he was fooling or not, but Costas tells the story. It was wicked funny.
Well, I believe Marvin at one point in his career went after somebody with a tire iron. I think that was the highlight of his career. He was a very good player for the Buffalo Braves,
I believe. St. Louis Stars in the old ABA.
But he had a tire iron problem.
That is a problem.
Yeah, and they hurt.
Jaguars' last trip to Seattle was 7 years ago. No, I'm sorry, 8 years ago this week. Mm-hmm. We were there in 2001. Play the Huskies Stadium, right? Remember, because the Quest Field was under construction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it today, just because I like to. And you remember that was the day, and everyone now knows, because they were probably paying attention to the news today, that was the day that the United States started bombing Afghanistan.
Yes.
After the 9/11 mm-hmm. situation. And I can remember right before we were getting ready to start our pregame show, we got word from Mike Dorward at WOKV we weren't having a pregame show that day.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, remember that, you know, it was going to be very seriously condensed for news coverage. And then, of course, there was a football game there that day, and it was a very subdued, environment, not just on the Jaguar sideline where they got beat 24-15, but it was never raucous at all.
I remember some things from that game. First of all, Tony Baselli, that was his last game.
In Jaguars.
Tony's last game. I can remember him leaving the huddle. Who was the guy who came in? He was a real kind of down-the-line practice squad kind of guy who replaced him. And I can remember the players talking about how the linebacker, Chad Brown. I can remember the players talking about Chad Brown and one of the other guys on the Seahawks standing over there and looking at this guy and saying, oh, yeah, baby, we're going to have some fun now. And then this poor guy just got terrorized. I forget his name, but he was...
I'm looking right now through the O2 book.
Oh, it might have been... Was it the kid from Syracuse? No, Banowicz?
Banowicz would have been a rookie, but he was playing on the right side then.
Yeah. Anyhow, it was Tony's last game. Marcus Stroud, that was a rookie.
Steve Hutchinson ate
him up. Steve Hutchinson kicked him all over the field, and Marcus, years later, would say that was the day he vowed that would never happen again, that he became a more dedicated player, lifting weights, taking care of his body.
That was Sean Alexander's break
there you
on
go.
The scene game.
Big game.
176 yards.
Well, you bring that up. You talk about Marcus and Steve Hutchinson. Mine was Chris Hinton.
Oh, great tackle.
Yeah. He kicked my rear end. Not just once, but twice.
You know what Chris Hinton's significance in NFL history is?
Yeah, he was involved in a very big trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went from
the Colts
to Atlanta.
He was John Elway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You mean as far as the draft pick?
Yeah, it was. I believe Ernie Accorsi.
It was.
Was the guy heading up the Colts? The Colts.
He was the Colts GM at the time.
He was the Colts GM at the time, and Ernie allowed John Elway, to back him off picking him because he was threatening to play Major League Baseball, et cetera. I won't play for the Colts, and Ernie took the bait. He got bluffed. And did the trade, which then turned into Chris Hinton. Very, very good player.
Worked out all right, but it wasn't John Elway.
Right, exactly, not John Elway. The significance of that is that Ernie Accorsi said years later, when it came time to pick Eli Manning, and this has involved that Manning-Rivers trade, the thing with the Chargers, the whole bit, he said, I got bluffed out of John Elway. I won't let it happen to me again. He thought Manning would be that good.
He turned out to be pretty much right.
Won a Super Bowl, and he's playing real well now.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I'll never forget sitting in that press box in Husky Stadium, which is so high.
It was hanging just from the roof.
Gorgeous day, and I couldn't take my eyes off the right.
The lake.
Lake Washington, and in the distance, Mount Rainier, snow-capped, and just looking like someone pulled a picture down.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle is absolutely beautiful.
One of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
This is, of all the new stadiums that have come up in the National Football League over the last, 10 years or whatever, this is the one that I have really looked forward to seeing.
I agree.
Because I haven't seen it, and, you see it on television, and it looks absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
The design of it, first of all, Seattle's a great town.
It is.
It looks like a great stadium, and I look very much forward to seeing this stadium. Very few of them excite me like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Cowboys Stadium kind of intrigues me now because
it's got all
just,
the bells and whistles.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this stadium is not—it's not over the top like
no,
that.
No.
It's just a unique design. And of course, Torrey Holt was telling the players this week because he played there with the Rams for so many years. It's always a playoff atmosphere. At least it has been for years.
Yep.
They raise that 12th man flag up there. They have a notable local sports personality or celebrity raise it up and get the crowd all fired up. That they're into it.
By the way. Sporting News released its best sports cities list today, 1 through 399. And Seattle came in beneath Jacksonville. I was stunned. Seattle came in 52nd, and Jacksonville came in 50th. And I don't get it with the University of Washington there, right. With the Mariners. They've got it all except hockey.
No, basketball. The Sonics are gone.
Yeah, are gone?
Yeah, and that's probably why they fell. The Sonics went to Oklahoma City.
That was my next question, Vic. So me and you are like way out of the basketball loop.
Yeah, I know that Vancouver has the hockey team, the Canucks.
Right. Seattle lost its basketball team.
I didn't know that.
Ago.
So, that's probably why they got knocked down. Yeah. But I was surprised that Seattle finished beneath Jacksonville in the rankings.
That's the really only blemish that I've seen. They've had 55 straight sellouts.
55.
Yeah.
Dating back to their Super Bowl run.
Joe, is this time for a break?
Not yet.
Because I have a letter I want to read
to
you
this.
Guys.
Let's take a break. Okay. We are at a point where we can take a break. Let's take it now.
What, no, let's tease us for the break.
No, wait a minute.
Not yet. Don't break
yet. Tease us here. I mean,
well,
letter from
one of our listeners. It's very, very disturbing. It's haunted me all week long. And go to the break.
You're bothered by this.
It's rough. It's rough. So go to the break, and then we'll go to it.
You don't want to miss this one, folks. We're back after this on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
This segment of Jaguars This Week, and it promises to be a lively one, is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the brand new Best Buy in the St. John's Town Center. Without further ado, a letter as read to the listening audience of this program by the senior editor of Jaguars.com, Vic Ketchman.
Well, apparently you guys just went over the edge a little bit too much last week. And I got a letter from Daniel from Jacksonville. So I'll read this to you.
We went over the edge?
Yeah.
Like me and Brian?
Yeah.
Okay.
The two of you. And of course, the call was not screened well by Joe. All right. Daniel from Jacksonville writes, I've been listening to the Jaguar shows on 690 since they began, and as a contractor, I really enjoy them as I'm still working then. I especially like to hear what E.F. Hutton, parentheses Jeff, says. E.F. Hutton. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, E.F. He didn't say, yeah, I know, he says E.F. Hutton. Tonight's show, meaning last Wednesday, finally sent me over the top, so here I'll vent. I'm so sick and tired of the arrogant attitude of the NFL and its minions, like y'all on that show. That means you three guys.
Not you.
Well, he's probably in a... You know,
he's venting to you, so he sees
detached
you as
way,
a
he's including me.
Family figure.
I don't think I'm not the kind of, I'm not harsh, you know, on the air. Well, as you
do have
are.
A softer edge.
In what other business do you blame the customer for the business failing? That's outrageous. You all sit there and constantly blame the customers of the Jaguars for the Jags' failure to sell their tickets. If a business is failing, it's the business's fault. This arrogant attitude that we're the NFL and we don't have to market, everyone should get on their knees and thank us for being here, is the height of arrogance and is a sorry way to run a business. You don't blame the customer for a business failing. It's either marketing, customer service, or the product that is to blame. In this case, I would say the lack of marketing. When the USFL Bulls were here, you never saw Tom more excited or supportive, but they have brilliant marketers. You couldn't turn on a radio station or enter a business that you didn't see or hear a promotion for the Bulls. They had no problem selling their tickets. Is that right? Sold them out, huh?
None of us were here. You weren't here, were you, Joe?
I was here.
Oh, you were. Okay.
Sold them out?
So was Matt Robinson.
And did they sell them all out?
I don't think so, no.
They also went outside of Jackson, promoted them. I go to places like Orlando, and I don't see or hear a peep about the Jaguars. Yet it's a huge, untapped market. But once again, the arrogance that we're the NFL, and so people should just fall all over themselves to buy our tickets, prevents this business from succeeding. After World War II, Coke thought they had the market sewn up and cut their marketing way back. And you know what happened? Pepsi came into being and has been a thorn in their side ever since. Coke still does pretty well, don't they?
Yeah.
In China, especially.
It's a good market.
Yeah, good place. Once again, this prima donna attitude, we're the NFL, is the marketing failure of this business. You don't blame the customer for a business failure. I heard that before. That's the height of arrogance. I dare you to read this on the air next Wednesday night. Well, it's been read. This is another fine mess you've gotten me into.
Me?
EF.
Me?
Well, obviously you've torqued this guy. He refers to you. He doesn't refer to me, Brian. He says EF. Hutton, Jeff.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Well, I'll tell you how I'm going to respond to it. I'll tell you what my response is. This is the best. This is the best marketing job. In 38 years of covering the NFL, this is the best marketing job I have ever seen. I have never seen a team be more aggressive in trying to hawk its tickets than this team is. Half packs, full packs, quarter packs, you
Flex
name
packs.
It, packs. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It angers me that this marketing department has to take it on the chin over and over and over. And why? Because they are an easy target to make an excuse. You know, this team is 2-2, and we know what the attendance situation is, and maybe that's why. And this all comes together. You know, I look at this list of best sports cities. Maybe that's why Jacksonville is way down the list at number 50.
Can I see the list?
Who's number one? Boston?
No.
Philly?
No.
New York?
This year it's Pittsburgh. It's Philadelphia number two, Boston number
Pittsburgh,
three.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
They got the two titles. They got the two titles. I mean, winning is a part of it. They announced the formula as winning is a part of it. The big part of it, is, of course, is the number of events, the total number of events, total number of attendance, that kind of thing. It's Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Phoenix, Miami, Dallas, Detroit. That's your top 10. Houston's 11. Nashville. Nashville is number 12. It's kind of surprising. I mean,
they had some trouble with their hockey team over the last couple of years.
It's not doing great. But, I mean, for Nashville to – who in the heck ever thought Nashville would succeed the way it has? I mean, it came out of nowhere. I mean, it was, you know, it was the place of the Grand Ole Opry. Did you ever consider it as a sports hub, as a pro sports hub?
No.
All they had was Vanderbilt for years.
Right. Yeah. They sure didn't do well. Right. They played to empty seats, and they didn't win either. Then comes Atlanta, Washington, Tampa, St. Pete, Minneapolis, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, for the obvious reason there. College, yeah. And they've got that hockey team in Raleigh is got one of the up-and-coming brands in all of professional sports, the Carolina Hurricanes. They sell it. They play to sellouts all the time, packed all the time. Denver, Salt Lake City, that's basketball, and Brigham Young, right? Because Chris Provo's figured in there.
Right around there.
And Indianapolis round out your top 20. And Jacksonville is at number 50.
Who's around Jacksonville? Just give me a couple on each side.
Gainesville, Florida is 41.
Mm-hmm.
Storrs, Connecticut, that's UConn, is 43. Austin, Texas is 38. State College, Pennsylvania, that's Penn State, is 48. I mean, come on. I mean, that's. I mean, you know, this is marketing? Marketing is causing this? When are we going to get off this marketing thing and just take responsibility for the way things are? Anyhow, that's my diatribe. Daniel shouldn't have written this letter if he didn't expect me to read it and if he didn't expect me to comment.
True enough. Just out of curiosity. Where does Miami fall in there? Where does Orlando fall in there? Orlando's 27th. And Miami...
Urami.
I don't even see it on here.
I can't imagine Miami being very high.
All of the teams in the top 10 are, except one, Pittsburgh, are four pro sports team sites. In other words, they've got Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh does not have the NBA. Of course, they get the big boost with Pitt basketball, which is, you know, like
that's a boost?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a sellout. I mean,
is it?
Oh, yeah, every game. Yeah, you're...
Miami's eighth. I didn't hear you say them in the top 10, which is why I went to the next page, but they're eighth.
Yeah, I read their name. Yeah, I did. They're NFL, Major League, although Major League Baseball does very poorly, and then, of course, the Heat, NBA, and the Florida Panthers, which
The Heat do pretty well, but, boy, I don't remember the last time that I've been to, what is it, Dolphin Stadium? Or I guess it's got a Landshark Stadium this year. I don't ever remember going down there and seeing a packed house.
I agree with you. See, the thing is, though, the tickets are sold. The place is empty. Not empty. The place is half full in many, many cases.
Mm-hmm.
But the tickets are sold. If the tickets were sold here, that'd be fine. That'd be fine. That's all.
Right.
You know, I don't want to hold a gun to people's heads that come to the game. But, folks, we got to – and I'm not appealing to the people who don't have it because I understand. I got to tell you, I don't think I could do it. I don't think with my salary that I could, you know, lay out for tickets all the time.
Sure.
I do have two club seats, but I couldn't, and that's part of my salary.
Right. That's why the Jaguars changed their approach. They're not selling season tickets. They're selling game to game.
But you got, I got to believe that in a 1.3 million market, that there are enough people to fill this stadium eight times. I won't even go with the two preseason games. I won't even go with 10. Just eight. That's all. Eight events a year. Some of these cities. Chicago, that's 250, 260 major leagues professional sports events a year. That's not even counting Northwestern. That's not counting Notre Dame an hour down the road.
Pricey tickets.
Well, they missed a good one on Sunday that was here.
Darn right they
missed
a good
one. Because that was as good as it gets.
That's as good as it gets.
Yeah, let's break for news here at the bottom, and we'll carry it over. If you'd like to weigh in, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351 for Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. And you hear this only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate on your way to the stadium or on your way home tonight. 355-NFL1. Let's grab a couple phone calls here. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato with you for Jaguars This Week. We'll go to John over at Keystone Heights. Hello, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent, thank you.
Yeah, I don't agree with this guy, but there is one thing that the radio station, and it's not anything against you guys or anything else, because I love listening to the show, you know that. The power, it drops off like at 7 o'clock out here. I'm not going to be able to hear you. I figured out a way. I mean, I actually had to buy one of the old radios where you could hook it up to an antenna, and I use the antenna, and that's how I pick you up.
Do you not get us on the FM?
Pardon?
Can you not reach us on the FM at 106.5?
The FM, because I'm so close to Stark, and they got the Eagle Country Station.
Gotcha.
Bleeds into it, too. I mean, probably, you know, going south and north and everything else, but out here, that station bleeds in.
Well, one more solution for you, and that is that Jaguars.com and WOKV now both.
My wife's usually on the internet and stuff. She doesn't want me doing that.
John, you got to take control of that situation.
She gets mad enough that I do this, you know. She says, why aren't you out mowing the yard?
John, I've covered the NFL for 38 years, and I've never seen any team market itself as this team has. Here's just some examples that I wrote down during the break. The flex packs. You don't see that anywhere else. I haven't. Discounts on concessions. This team went out of its way, Wayne Weaver did, went out of his way to reward and acknowledge 15-year season ticket holders this year. Free golf. Free golf to ticket holders. I mean, it's just with the arrangement that the Jaguars have with Hampton Golf. What a fantastic perk. That is, just paying cart fees. Not for yourself, for your foursome. If I'm a season ticket holder, I can take three guys out as guests and just pay the cart fees. On fabulous golf courses. Discounts to local merchants. That scrimmage this summer, that's just for the fans. That's just for you. That whole thing was set up just for you.
That was nice.
Just like the Oklahoma drill. The coach did that just for you. He didn't want to do the Oklahoma for his football team. He wanted to do it for the fans. Also, the autograph line at training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Teams aren't doing that anymore. Accessing these players with the way security is nowadays, it's unbelievable the access the fans have to these players. You know, go right up to them, mm-hmm. touch them, talk to them, etc. The appearances in the community, schools, etc.,
which are very large in number. You know, let me just make a comment on that because, you know, I've had to Vic and Brian and John. I've had a lot of people ask me, boy, you know, the Jaguars don't seem to get out in the community as much as they did back in the early days. And my response to that is that, boy, if you only knew, it may be more.
So I agree with you
than it ever has been. But the big difference is that, you know, back in '95 and '96, in the early years, it was considered newsworthy for the local media outlets to cover it. And so they sent cameras there and they sent reporters there. And, you know, the media people aren't covering that now. But it's still happening at just as high, if not higher, of a level than ever.
For the hometown huddle yesterday with the United Way up at Matthew Gilbert Middle School right up the road here, mm-hmm. they had 35 players. I can tell you, frontline players, too, were up there with those kids in the gym. It was a great day. And by the way, over the 11 years that I've done the hometown huddle with the United Way, mm-hmm. never had that many players and never had that many frontline players with the kids.
Cheerleaders, mascot. Jaguars have a full-time mascot. A full-time employee.
One of the best in the league.
Yeah. Full-time employee. Full-time cheerleader manager.
Yes.
Full-time employee. Flybys. Hey, I didn't see cheerleaders when I was covering the Steelers. They didn't have a mascot. I never saw a flyby.
We didn't have cheerleaders or a mascot in New York, although I see the Jets now have cheerleaders.
Do they really?
Yes, they
wow.
do.
Wow.
Like the Boston Celtics have them, too, so you know the world's changing.
These flybys that everybody loves. You know, as I said, I never saw them anywhere. Never saw them.
And that takes a lot of work. You got to go through the Department of Defense to get those.
The drumline. Steelers got a high school band every week. They went out and played the national anthem, played their fight song, and left. Shooting T-shirts up in the stands. This is all marketing. Yet over and over and over, I get this thing. You know, why don't they put billboards up in Orlando? Screw the billboards. Billboards. Why do people think? If they put up billboards that say, well, why don't they knock, why don't they go door to door? And let's not forget the Champions Club.
They've worked their behinds off.
Make thousands and thousands and thousands of calls every year. If we can please just stop one thing, just please stop blaming everything else. Let's just accept the responsibility of filling this stadium. As Jeff said, Sunday's game against the Titans, it's a high moment in this franchise's history. I mean, they kicked the snot out of their rival. You know, for everybody who wanted to stick it where the sun don't shine on Jeff Fisher.
That was it.
That
was the day, because it got stuck. I mean, way up there.
I should probably let it go, but I like the facts to be correct. Danny said something, is that his name, Danny? About the Bulls selling out every game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Bulls played 9 games in 1984. The biggest day in terms of attendance was when they hosted Herschel Walker and the New Jersey Generals. That was 73,227. They had as few as 31,638 here for a game against the Houston Gamblers in May.
What was their second highest attendance that year?
71,174 for Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the third highest.
Spurrier was the coach, right?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. You got to go into the 40s now. But the average attendance for a stadium that was clearly at least 73,227,
mm-hmm.
probably more than that, was 46,730 people. That's the average attendance on a 9-game home season. So just for facts.
They only had 2 seasons.
Yeah, just for facts.
You know, fine, that's wonderful. That's great, but I mean, are you going to, seriously, are you going to compare the Bulls' marketing to the Jaguars? Come on, come on.
That's why I brought the number in. 355-NFL1. 355-6351. We've got Thomas in Cambridge, Mass. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Home of Harvard.
All right. I have a few comments. First of all, I just want to say thank all you guys. You guys do a fantastic job. And Mr. Vic Ketchman, you are – I thank you for your excellence, your column, the website. For an out-of-town fan, you make it real easy to follow the team.
Thanks.
Thank you. Secondly, Daniel from Jacksonville, I don't know what he's talking about. You said it in your column. It's like, and I feel the same way, it's almost like the Jaguars are almost embarrassing themselves trying to get fans to buy tickets.
Absolutely.
They're doing everything. Like you said it all. They're doing all of these things. What do they have to do to get a fan to buy a ticket?
Daniel is attempting to deflect, like a lot of people in Jacksonville. He's trying to deflect criticism. He wants to pin the blame somewhere else. And that isn't going to work. We all have to accept, I hate to say responsibility, but because no one is responsible for buying a ticket. But if we want this to succeed, we have to understand that the tickets have to be bought.
Exactly. And the quality of product that we have from the owner, Wayne Weaver, to a great coach like Jack Del Rio and Gene Smith, the draft class, just one draft class, and our franchise has changed. The team has changed. I mean, the promise that's there, that's such a quality team, I don't think we know what we have. I say this as if I'm there. I grew up in Jacksonville, been there all my life, just moved here for college. But
wow.
we don't know what
he
the
moved
Jaguars
there for college.
Harvard.
Yeah.
He moved there to go to college.
Going to Harvard.
He's going to Harvard.
No, I'm not going to Harvard, I'm going to MIT.
Hey,
we apologize.
So actually you're not going where the rich kids go, you're actually going where the smart kids go.
I hope so anyway.
All right, so my question
to
you.
Going to MIT.
Okay, Thomas, what are you going to study at MIT?
Well, right now I'm leaning towards ocean engineering.
Oh, so yeah, it was one of my favorites. Yeah.
hopefully
I minored in
it. Job. Did you really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. At Kent State, we had a great ocean engineering department.
That's cool stuff now.
So hopefully I can get a job near the ocean in a place like Jacksonville and to come back and support my team.
There you go. Good stuff.
But, thanks.
One other question.
Go ahead.
I don't know whenever you guys are ready to talk about the football aspect.
We're ready now.
We're
ready now.
Okay. Vic, in your in-game blog against the Cardinals, and it was a couple games ago, but you made a comment about Ken Wisenhut attacking the Jaguars linebackers.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, I guess I never saw a follow-up on that, but what did you think that he was seeing in the linebackers that he was attacking?
Well, when you screen a lot, when you're running screens and swing passes and drag routes over the middle, you know, it's generally accepted that when you screen, for instance, you're going after the linebackers.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't attacking them deep down the field. He was living in that hook zone. He was living in the flats and the hook zones. He was staying in that 10-yard box.
Which has gotten a whole lot better over the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The linebacker play has steadily improved. By the way, Darryl Smith the last two games has been fantastic. I mean, I expect Justin Durant to follow well as well, but right now Darryl is playing clearly head and shoulders above the other guys.
Right now, Darryl Smith's shoestring tackle on that tight end screen play in Houston is the turning point in the season.
Yeah, you could look to that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. 355 NFL 1. We have one more segment in this hour, then one more hour of Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
All right, welcome back, Jaguars This Week. We've got about 5 minutes left at this segment in this hour. And to be honest with you, there are some folks on the line that want to rant and rave, but we got to get to football at some point. Why does he always forget your mic?
I don't know. We did the rant. Daniel ranted.
Right.
Okay.
We ranted back.
So that's done. That's over. That's done.
Well, trust us, folks. We can talk about this every week. Every week. So let's let it alone and talk a little bit about the football team. 2-2. I know you're surprised by that.
I'm stunned.
Because when they came off that loss to Arizona and you saw a Texans team coming off a big road win and you thought the Titans were better than they were, it's hard to have said 2 weeks ago they'd be here today.
Well, when the season began, I looked at the schedule and I said, maybe they'll get lucky and grab one in the first four games. But I thought that Seattle might be their first legitimate chance to win a game, and I wasn't sure about that either. All I was sure was that this team would beat the St. Louis Rams. And I saw a start very similar to the 1-7 start in 2003. In fact, I saw this season as I expected to be a carbon copy of 03. They would have had the Titans after the bye week. I mean, I had this team starting 1-6.
All right. So, are your expectations still what they've been all along, or have they changed with a 2-2 start, which you didn't expect?
Well, they have to have changed now. I mean, they're playing really well, and they got a hot quarterback.
And a young group of players who are contributing.
Yeah, and I said to you guys during the break, per a question to ask Vic, I went through the draft class of every team in the league today. There is no one even close to this team in the way of contribution from members of their draft class. Detroit would be the closest with Matt Stafford and Louis Delmas, But really, no one is even close to getting from their draft class what this team is getting.
But
from
but you got to remember that the core is still a veteran group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a lot of people are kind of, I think, sometimes get the misimpression that, you know, the youth is the reason why this team is 2-2.
Yeah, but Jeff, Derek Cox is leading you in interceptions with two.
Sure.
Okay. I think Mike Thomas has changed the face of this offense.
I disagree with you there. To me, what's changed the offense has been the play of the quarterback.
Okay.
I mean, in the first two games, I didn't think he was very good. In the last two games, I think he's been outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the big difference. You know, and if you look at that Tennessee game, and if you look at David's numbers historically against the Tennessee Titans, his career average rating-wise was in the
62.
60s. You know, he,
against who?
Against the Titans. Mm-hmm. And that's a significant number of games. I mean, was it 6, 7, 8 games?
He was a 2-6 as a starter going
so
into
eight games.
Sunday mm-hmm. with a 62.9 passer rating.
And they have traditionally always basically said, if you're going to beat us, then, David, you've got to win. And he hadn't been able to do that consistently. This, I think, was a big game for David as far as kind of overcoming that hurdle
mm-hmm.
against teams that are going to play him that way. And I hope it continues to be at that high level and to continue to grow. But he was unreal on Sunday.
He really was. He really was.
I know you like those milestone kind of things. I mean, this game, I hope, looking back, is a milestone for the quarterback.
It was his second best game as a pro yardage-wise.
Well, he's finally got a group of receivers, to go back to your Mike Thomas point, mm-hmm. that he can work with, for goodness sakes.
Well, and see, I mean, the receivers are better, but Mercedes has helped. But really, his play, I mean, really, when we look back, I mean, this game was about him and about him winning for the team. Because he took the Tennessee Titans. We had talked about it before the game, about how you go in a game like that as a team that likes to play you close to the vest. They run the football. They play good defense. They don't turn the ball over. And they win games by a couple points. By him coming up and lighting them up, took them completely out of the game plan. They couldn't do what they normally do.
In the minute that we have left here before we break for news, thought, because people who are listening want to hear what you thought about Mike Thomas, though.
Well, he gives them the element of speed you need to stretch the field sideways. Remember when they drafted Matt Jones, his first game against Seattle? Here we go. He didn't even earn it, and he was just handed this slash roll. You know, direct snap, run wide. Well, but he didn't have the speed to scare anybody. This guy has the speed to make linebackers think laterally. When you can stretch a team sideways, you keep the linebackers from pinching inside. When you can stretch a defense vertically, you keep the safeties from cheating up to the line of scrimmage. This team hasn't had a player, a wide receiver with the speed to stretch a team vertically or horizontally. In my opinion, Mike Thomas is making linebackers think outside, not just inside.
All right, we're due for news here at the top of the hour. Ladies and gentlemen, we have one more hour of this fine radio program. And we will conduct that after the news here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. See you on the other side.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato. Join us at 355-NFL1. 355-6355.
You know what I want to know?
What?
Something about the Seahawks. Honest to God, I know nothing about them. I mean, I literally, all I know is that Hasselbeck has what, bad ribs?
Broken ribs.
He broke a rib against San Francisco when Patrick Willis hit him when he was diving in the end zone, similar to what Donovan McNabb got.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, if you would, give us a scouting report on the Seahawks. Are they any good?
They're very injured.
That's all we need to know.
They're very injured.
Well,
that pause. Pretty much.
Let me say this, because I think you really got two different opinions here, because you got, you know, the evaluation of the team that I watched in Week 1 play against the St. Louis Rams when they had people playing
28-0.
Versus, you know, last week where they're, you know, since then they've missed 10 starters for 23 games. You know, I mean, that's the big – I mean, we know what happens to teams in the NFL when they get injuries. You just can't overcome it. And their injuries have been at marquee position.
Well, their left tackle,
quarterback, left tackle, Walter Jones. Their center, starting center, first-round draft pick, missed the first – is that right?
Yeah, Chris Spencer was a first-round pick.
Missed the first two games. Their starting left guard is going to miss this week and a couple weeks beyond that.
Well, wait. Their right tackle went to left tackle when Walter got hurt. He's now out until November with a high ankle.
Yet they're not bad with sacks. So what is it, Seneca Wallace being mobile? Has he prevented the sacks?
Yeah, but he got sacked five times against Indianapolis.
And Robert Mathis actually had a really big day.
They're still – eighth in the league in sacks per pass play. You know, I mean, so that, I mean, they must have protected very well in the first two games.
They've had to throw a ton, though. I mean, against Indianapolis, Seneca Wallace had 44 pass attempts, you know, something in that range. But, you know, defensively, they had Tutupu out for a game. Their corner situation has
– Javonte is on PUP.
PUP.
Oh.
Their other starting corner, who is starting in the place of Trufant, missed the last two games with an ankle. You know, it's been a team that has struggled with injuries. You know, and until they get healthy, it's going to – put it this way.
And Pat Kearney's probably not going to play this week.
Yeah, he's got a groin.
It
this way. If you were to – I think much like, you know, facing the Tennessee Titans last week where you had Cortland Finnegan out, you had their starting nickel out, and the way they – and the style that they play defense where they challenge quarterbacks. If you were ever going to face the Tennessee Titans, I think last week was a perfect week. Because they were in a rut and they were missing some starters in that defensive secondary. The Seattle Seahawks this week, I think, is in that same line. And that if you could face them at an opportune time, now is it.
So the Jaguars are not only getting better, the fate is treating them.
Except that you have to go 6 hours to play them. I mean, that levels it out somewhat, right?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I mean, to me, when I played, I never really understood why they talked about, and now. With a team on the West Coast having to come out here, yeah, maybe.
You're losing time.
Yeah, because you're losing time. But for an East Coast team going out there, you know, it's instead of playing a 1 o'clock game, it's really playing a 4 o'clock game. And that's okay later for me. It was always okay for me. The harder ones was trying to play in the morning, you know, which was a team that's coming from there to here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't put too much into that, you know, with the travel. You know, the team's traveling on Friday this week. I always like just to leave early in the morning on Saturday and travel the day before like usual.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I'm not crazy about this going out on Friday. I mean, you can get cabin fever. You know, I mean, you just start to feel like, I want to get out of here. And it can be overwhelming. I think, I don't know. I'm not crazy. Well, we'll see how it goes. I have been with teams that have done it every imaginable way. Going out early on Friday, late on Friday, early on Saturday. Once, even Bill Cowher went out so late to San Diego on a Saturday that the plane landed at bedtime.
The league probably...
I know. The league said, no more of that, because you're supposed to be on the ground 24 hours before kickoff. The plane landed at bedtime. So, the idea was, there is no watch. I'm just tired. I'm going to bed. There is no clock. And they won. And they won big. I've been with teams that have done it every imaginable way, and there's no correlation.
No, there's no secret. Well, you know, or magic formula.
You're not playing at elevation in Seattle because you're at sea level, right? I mean, the mountains are above you.
It's not elevation.
But it's not like Denver where it's 5,700 feet.
No, and I don't know how much you know, by going to Denver early, how much you can get acclimated in a couple days. I mean, I don't believe that.
What they always said about Denver was to try to go in so that the game is completed before 24 hours has elapsed, because as long as you're there for just 24 hours, you're on Jacksonville blood. So what coaches used to do was their plane would get a mysterious malfunction over Omaha, and then it would land and sit there for a while they look things over and say, "Okay, guys, everything's fine now. We'll be on our way." And then you would get there, you know, like 20 hours before kickoff. That was an old favorite.
The biggest thing this week, though, and the biggest storyline is, will Hasselbeck play?
Yeah.
I mean, because he makes them a much better football
limited
team.
In practice today. Just that's his status. Limited.
What if he can't play? How bad's Wallace? What do you think of him?
He's a mobile quarterback. You know, he's probably 10% less accurate, or 10% completion percentage less accurate than Hasselbeck. You know, he can't drive the ball down the field like Hasselbeck can.
Who's their best receiver?
Their best receiver is a guy that half spec typically throws to the guy recovering from an ACL, Burleson. But Seneca Wallace, you know, he's not a down the field guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a dink and dunk and run around guy.
TJ Houshmandzadeh.
Mm-hmm. Houshmandzadeh is more along the lines of Seneca Wallace's guy. But, you know, Houshmandzadeh, was he ever a game breaker in Cincinnati?
Yeah, he's a possession
guy. The game breaker was Chad Ochocinco. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the big storyline going in this game is will Hasselbeck play? And if he does, at what level of effectiveness can he play at? And if he does play, how soon can you knock him out of the game with that, you know, patchwork offensive line?
Okay, this team's got four in a row against teams that are a combined 1-15. Seattle, then St. Louis, then at Tennessee, then Kansas City here. What are your expectations? What do you think the Jaguars should, given the state of performance as it stands right now, what do you think the Jaguars should come out of those four games at?
Well, it's amazing how many people could, you know, come up to you, you know, after in the wake of the Tennessee win and like, oh, yeah, you know, playoff team now, right? And I'm like, whoa.
That's too far.
Slow down, folks, you know, and let's not get carried away. You know, this is a team that's young. The core is not extremely young, but it's got a lot of young fringe areas. Mm-hmm. You know, so my expectations is that, you know, if you can come out of this stretch, you know, above 500, that's okay. You know, I still think that this team is not going to go out and just be expected to beat Kansas City.
You'd have
to win expected three, to beat Seattle.
You'd have to win three of those games to be above 500.
Out of how many total, you're saying?
Well, you're 2-2, and if you
above 500 means you'd be 5-3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So three of the four.
Well, I don't expect. I mean, even coming back at 500, I'm not so much looking at records. I'm looking at what's happening on the field. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, that's the important thing.
Are they progressing?
You know, are they moving forward? Because it doesn't matter what you do in October. It matters what you're doing down the stretch to me.
We might as well go there because I know the callers. Maybe someone wants to go there.
Derek on over on the west side wants to go there. Hello, Derek. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I had two quick points. I'm afraid one is the stadium thing, but I just want to say this real quick, and then the second point, it was an interesting statistic. You know, the first point is, like Vic said, it's not a duty, it's not an obligation,
nope.
But, you know, I mean, there are plenty of people out here that, you know, half of the water in the aquifer is going to water lawns and, you know, driving trucks with nothing in the truck bed and no one sitting next to them. So, you know, if in 10, 15 years' time, the team moves, you know, they can puzzle it out for themselves because it's not like the owner's crazy or the mayor's not keeping the stadium renovated or, you know, people can't get out after a game.
This is the first. There hasn't been a team leave its city because of attendance problems since, and I could be wrong about this, but this is according to my research, since the Texans left Dallas in 1952 at midseason.
To go to Hershey.
Yeah. They were expansion. They had just put them, the NFL had just put this new team in Dallas, the Dallas Texans, in 1952. It was such a horrible failure that they had to move them out of there to Hershey, Pennsylvania at midseason just to avoid the financial avalanche that they were experiencing. Then at the end of the year, that team became the Baltimore Colts.
What about the two Los Angeles teams that left in 95? Either one of those? Or were those totally?
Oh, stadium. All the other ones are stadium related.
I know the Raiders.
The Raiders,
the Rams.
Rams were stadium related. I mean, St. Louis.
It's not like St. Louis built them a palace.
Last time I covered a game in the Los Angeles Coliseum was in 1994. The press box was condemned, boarded up, wouldn't let us in. We had to sit in the peristyle end in a makeshift outdoor kind of press box.
Well, you could have just sat out in the seats. There was plenty of room.
I was thinking more of the Rams.
The Rams are strictly straight stadium issues. Sure. The Raiders, strictly stadium issues.
Cleveland, Houston.
All the other ones. I mean, come on. We don't want to be the first city since 1952, you know.
To not be able.
I mean, come on.
To keep the team because of lack of interest.
It's
Derek,
just, it's
Derek
just
have a, another question?
Yeah, go ahead, Derek.
I didn't. I know how much you guys hate talking about
see,
it.
See what you did there? You fired Vic up.
Well, it's, you know, it's not that we can't talk
fault.
About it or,
no, no,
or hate
no,
it. Just that people want
to
hear about football
about
at some
so
point.
Yeah.
It bothers me because this week ProFootballTalk.com just took a horrendous shot. Don Banks from SI.com took a hideous shot. I mean, the shots are coming fast and furious. And this city's reputation as being a hotbed for football is being destroyed.
But keep in perspective. I mean, you know, there are real serious issues. I mean, not that I mean, there would be a lot of lost business and a lot of future business that we would lose if the team moved. But I mean, it is what it is. If the people that can afford the tickets that like the team won't go, then I mean, we're not shrinks. You know,
you're right.
I mean, I don't know what to say to them.
You're right.
But as for the second thing, I know that Vic and all of you had felt like you maybe jumped on the bandwagon a little early last year and everything, though, you know, who could have seen it coming, the drop-off being so fast. But I saw an interesting statistic two weeks ago on another NFL game where they said something like teams that start 0-2 in the last 10 years don't go to the playoffs like 75-80% of the time. Not that I'm trying to be, you know, Debbie Downer. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm happy the team's doing good and maybe they'll make it all the way and everything, but to me, we're rebuilding, and we look like we've got a team on the ascent. And,
yeah.
and you know, whether we can look at the scoreboard in November or December, that'd be nice. But I'm just happy that, like you said, we've got Mike Thomas stretching the field horizontally, the corners. You know, Derek Cox is
looking
really good.
Don't worry about that 0-2 Super Bowl thing. This team's not going to the Super Bowl. I really feel strongly that I can say that. I won't sell them short in any other way. But I think if we start talking along those lines, then we all need a straitjacket.
You get away from the fundamental underpinnings that we've been laying in place since training camp.
This is a rebuilding year. Now,
I said at the beginning that the excitement for me for this year is about watching a team and watching a young group of players develop.
Yep.
That's the excitement of this year to me.
Yeah, development means failing at times, too, and we're going to see some of that.
I'm liking watching Dirk Cutter put out a game plan like he did this past Sunday that was like nothing I had seen in a long time.
That was by far maybe the finest coaching job that the Jaguars have had in the last 3 years.
Stay right there. Let's take a break. We need to squeeze it in right here. We'll come back with more Jaguars this week right after this on News Talk Radio WOKV.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Short segment here. Let's get right to the phones, and we'll start with Mike out at the beach. Thoughts on Derek Harvey. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that being four games into the season, I've been watching Derek Harvey's performance and, you know, no sacks yet by the fourth game. And, you know, only 3.5 sacks last year, and two of them came in the last game. So, well, my question is do you think – how much of this can you, like, put on the blame of the coaches? Do you feel like maybe the techniques that they're teaching him isn't, like – working that well, or maybe that they're dropping him back into coverage is also hurting?
Well, I'm going to let Jeff address that, and then I want to go to comments. I want to go to Jack Del Rio's press conference today give you some further information on Derek Harvey and then another guy, too. So, Jeff, if you would that question.
My expectations have become lowered for Derek. I mean, I just...
Become what? Lowered?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be an elite pass rusher now. So what I've kind of changed my approach with him, and I want to look at him now as is he a contributor? You know, is he a good football player?
Is he?
Yeah, he's playing well at times. I mean, is he a dominant player? No. Is he living up to a top 10 pick? No. If you had to assign a draft round to him right now, you'd probably say second or third. You know, so it is what it is. But I'm not at the point where I'm saying he's a bust, it's over, he's not going to be able to contribute. Hey, look, he didn't draft himself, okay? That didn't happen. So All I'm worried about is, can he be a starter and can he be a contributor?
You know, from my perspective, I think we called his name a whole lot more on Sunday against the Titans than we have in
played
his
better.
Entire time here.
Played better. You know, he got a couple pressures on the quarterback and made one pretty good play on the run there where he bounced the ball to the outside when he took on some blocks. But, you know, the games prior to that, when he played at left defensive end after the injury to Reggie Hayward, you know, I thought that maybe he would be better served in that role because he didn't show the ability to be a dominant pass rusher, and I thought he could handle it, but he didn't. He didn't play well.
He's going up against scrap this week. He should do something. Now, Jack Del Rio at his press conference today praised Derek Harvey's effort in the game on Sunday, and that's great. I mean, you got to have effort. That's wonderful. My thing with Derek Harvey is this. And I said this the other night on my show on Monday. If Terrence Knighton comes out with no stats on the stat sheet, that doesn't mean he didn't play well. Because if he knocked his guy around and dominated the middle and caused the running back to have to bounce outside, etc., then he did his job. But you see, Derek Harvey, he's like Derek Thomas, he's like Tony Brackens. He's been put into a playmaker position. He's got to be on the stat sheet. He's got to have sacks and tackles for losses and hurries and forced fumbles and fumble recoveries and passes defensed. That's just the nature of the position he's been put in, and that's why he was paid all that money, $17 million for a signing bonus. But the real news today was not about Derek Harvey. It was about Quentin Groves. First of all, Quentin Groves has fallen behind Bryan Smith on the depth chart.
Smith just got here last week.
2 weeks. You know, this will be his second game, and right. He's already ahead of Quentin Groves on the depth chart. When asked about that, Jack Del Rio said, the guys who produce play. At this point in time, Quentin Groves' greatest contribution is going to be on special teams and as a backup. Ouch. Now, this is a second-round pick, and this is a guy you traded away a lot of draft picks to move up to pick in the second round. This is a major bummer. You don't like to hear this about that kind of a guy at this stage of his career. And the real major bummer part of this is that, let's not forget, the Jaguars went into that draft in 08 with 11 picks. 11 picks. They came out with five players, and they only have two left, and one of them looks like he's on his last legs. Looks like he's in danger if he doesn't pick up his game.
You know what I view that as? Kicking the pants.
There's no question.
And sooner or later, if Derek Harvey's production doesn't start, you know, getting better, there will probably be a kick in the pants down the road somewhere for him.
When the coach calls you out.
That's a professional kick in the pants.
Right. When the coach calls you out, you better respond.
Wasn't Groves starting to show signs of life when they changed to this 3-4 alignment? I mean, didn't we see some things from him that made us think, well, maybe this fits him better?
Yeah, I mean, he showed some things, but
obviously not consistently.
You know, hey, right now this team needs a pass rusher in the worst way.
Dead last in the league.
I mean,
sacks per pass play on defense.
You look at the sacks per pass play. You look at the passing yards allowed.
Dead last in the league.
You look at the opposing quarterback rating. I mean. All those are a result of that you haven't been able to generate a lot of pass rush.
Jaguars went out and signed this Bryan Smith kid last Sunday night, not the Sunday after the Texans win, off the Rams practice squad. What did he do? What did you see in the tape?
I thought he played well. He was very active, very athletic, and for a guy that basically just walked in the door last week and played, I thought he played very well. You know, so it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, they signed him, but they also signed the defensive tackle / defensive end
Greg Peterson
that has a knee issue, and I don't think he's quite ready to play yet, but sooner or later
after the bye,
expect to see him possibly getting some reps, where currently Atiyah Ellison, right end, is getting the bulk of the playing time. The big thing I think for me in that game this past weekend was John Henderson playing left end. And John played, did you notice how much energy he had in that ball game? I was going, did he take one of Vic's pills?
I gave him two.
but I mean, is that a sign that John was excited about it? I mean, first of all, you match him against Big Country, their physical right tackle. Mm-hmm. and I thought he played very well. And is that something that was just a game plan thing, or is that something that is maybe something that they're tweaking to try to find a something that's going to work going forward? I don't know. We'll find out this week.
355-NFL-1. We've reached the bottom of the hour. Time for a quick break for news. When we return, 30 more minutes of this fine radio program here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Rolling right along. Phone lines are stacked this evening. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week on AM 690, 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV. You got a favorite up there on the board, Log? Or Vic, Logs, you want to go there?
Go to line three, Mason and Fleming Island, because it's something I wanted to get to anyway.
All right, Mason, welcome to the show. Handpicked by Jeff Loggeman.
Thanks for taking my call, fellas. I have two questions about Jaren Alexander. I saw, Vic, on your blog, on your column, you said that it was the best safety play you've seen in the Jaguars for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you think that he has the starting spot over Sean Considine now. And also, I was a Gerald Sensabaugh fan last year, and I was going to see if you think he's going to contribute more than Sensabaugh did.
Well, he's doing nothing in Dallas.
He's hurt now. Yeah, he's hurt now.
Alexander will start because Considine is hurt. Alexander is really a free safety, although he can play strong safety. I don't know how well Considine was playing. I thought he was the better of the two safeties, but they weren't getting good play, from either, were they?
You know what? Well, I think it was okay. I mean, but not the level that they wanted to see. I mean, a lot of that's affected by versus the pass versus what you got going on up front. It's kind of all interrelates. But will Considine get his job back or get a job back when he comes back? I don't know. They're not going to take Gerald Alexander out of the lineup if he continues to play like he did this past week. Mm-hmm. If Considine were available to play right now, which I don't know if he is or not, but if he were, he would not be the starter this week.
What if Considine was healthy? And now remember, Gerald Alexander is really a free safety. Who look at those three guys: Nelson, Alexander, and Considine. Give me your two starters.
I mean, right now, mm-hmm. it would be Reggie and Gerald Alexander, mm-hmm. Just because that's what they got available. Now, if they were all three healthy, I'd be tempted to pull a Quentin Groves on maybe Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Kicking the pants kind of
thing.
That's
what I'm getting at.
You know, and that's what makes players play the best, mm-hmm. is competition. I mean, you hear it year in and year out. The more competitive you have positions, the better the performance is.
I don't like, and I know the Jaguars have done a lot of this year with their rookies, and I hope it turns out well, but I don't like handing guys jobs from day one. In other words, OTAs. Reggie Nelson was a starter in his rookie OTAs. I'm not crazy about that. It works. Rasheem Mathis was a starter from day one, and it worked with him. But
the one thing, though, that
I'd like to see them earn it.
The one thing that Reggie gives them that the other safeties don't is that when they go to nickel or they go to dime, Reggie can match up
right
as a corner type player.
Right.
The other safeties, I don't think, have that ability.
He, numerically speaking, what do you have, 9 tackles and a fumble recovery?
He played
pretty well.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, did anybody play bad Sunday?
No.
No. I mean, everybody played well, except for the pass rushers. I thought they were, I mean, gosh, when you get out to that quick of a lead, you expect it to be a sack fest.
With a quarterback who doesn't move at all.
Look what happened in Indianapolis. And obviously, we're talking about Freeney and Mathis, which aren't your run-of-the-mill pass rushers. But any scores on 4 out of their 5 first drives of the ball game, get out to an early lead, Seahawks got a pass, and they got a mobile quarterback, and they sack him 5 times in the game.
The $64,000 question this week is about the tackles. Do you put the two rookies back in if they're ready to go, or
yes.
Do you stay with the old guys? And I see that you got a caller. It looks like he wants to go there.
All right. So we'll go right to Mike in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Mike.
Hi. I enjoy your show. My question is, based on the line play last week where there was very good pass blocking and run blocking, should the veterans play or keep the rookies there? And I just have one comment, and I'll take your answer off the air. I think Wayne Weaver is probably the best owner in the NFL, and what he's done for Jacksonville and his philanthropy and bringing a team and his commitment to us deserves the fan support, period. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, and good question. And Let's go back to the game in Houston. What did Mario Williams do?
Nothing.
You know, there wasn't a change in performance all of a sudden this week in Tennessee because you had Mo Williams and you had Trey Thomas in the lineup. You know, that performance was pretty doggone good in Houston, the last time I remember. Mm-hmm. So the play of the tackles didn't all of a sudden make the quarterback way better. I mean, it did in Houston because I think the first game David was under pressure, as most quarterbacks are when they play the Colts. And against Arizona, I didn't think the protection was that bad. Against Houston, it got pretty solid. I thought it was really good.
All right, I'm looking at the injury report from today, which is really the practice report. I don't see Eugene Monroe's or Evan Britton's name on it, meaning they practiced.
They practiced.
Full participants, all right? So they are ready to go. Ha, huh. I see Trey Thomas's name on here as did not participate in practice due to a knee. You see, a couple thoughts here. First of all, Trey Thomas is an older player. If you play him and play him and play him,
he's not gonna make it.
He ain't gonna make it. And he was signed to give you insurance at that position. He was signed to do exactly what he did this past week, to be plugged in and know that you got a quality guy that can hold up his end of the deal. All right? If you're gonna make him play every week, he's gonna break down on you. I get the feeling, looking at not only from looking at the injury report, but knowing the commitment that's been made to Britton and Monroe, that they will be back in the lineup on Sunday.
Let me draw this comparison. Let's say, Vic, me and you are going to make a road trip, okay? Me and you are going to drive to Seattle for the Jaguars game.
That'd be a fun car.
Okay, we're getting ready to leave tomorrow. We got two vehicles parked out there in the parking lot. We got a 1978 Chevrolet pickup, okay? And we've got a 2008 Chevy pickup. Which one are we going to drive?
We have to have a truck, huh?
Well, yeah, with me, yeah.
You'd like a Delta.
I think, yeah, exactly.
We're going to take
We're going to drive Eugene.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a long road here now. 16 games, you know, throughout the course of the season.
I don't want to break down on the Rockies.
That 78 park next to that other one, it's got a lot of miles on it.
Yeah.
You know, tires aren't, you know, so good. I mean, it may work good for you know,
Georgia,
a little stretch
Tennessee.
Here and there. Yeah, I mean, we do okay from here to, you know, around the corner and to get us through maybe one day.
We might break down in Montana or something, and then they want to charge us $500 for a spare tire. You know,
something.
Leave it to Loggy to bring it right back to perspective. Real quick, Loggy. Some other guys got in the game. Wanneri moved over to center for a while. Keenan Forney got in the game. Jordan Black saw some action. What did you see from
one of the better games that Uche has had, I think, since he's ever started? And, you know, the interesting thing to me, I don't think there's any question that when Eben is back and ready to play, he's going to play. Because I thought Eben has had a great start to a very young career. The interesting thing is that when he comes back, will there be a little competition at right guard? You see what the coaches are doing here? See, if performances are all of a sudden become subpar, they've got guys they're going to roll in.
Mm-hmm.
If Mo Williams goes back to guard and has a poor game, hey, Uche, you're in. You know, if Reggie Nelson has a game that's not real great and Considine is healthy, hey, Sean, you're up this week. You know, I think that Gene Smith has really kind of brought this to the table in that if performances aren't there, then there will be changes now. You look at what happened last week with the roster. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, hey. For the first couple weeks of the season, we were seeing 2, 3, maybe 4 roster changes every week. Have we not? I mean,
absolutely.
I think some of this stuff of Gene Smith is rubbing off on the head coach. And, hey, let's use play time. It's a tool.
Yeah, well, you know,
you got to earn it.
Monroe and Britton are not mentioned at all in the report, which would indicate that they have no health issues, right?
Correct.
Then they're starters on Sunday.
Yes. Let's take a break. You're listening to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Final segment of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. 355-NFL1. Grab some phone calls here. We'll go to Dave over on the west side to kick it off. Hello, Dave.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, just wanted to reaffirm Jeff's comments on Dirk Koetter. I think the last couple of games have been outstanding. Offensive plays have been just great. And one thing I wanted that I noticed last game is that in the Houston game, we did that that quarterback option thing a few times. We didn't really use it that much. I mean, I might be wrong, but it didn't seem like we used it as many times, and we got a little more diverse.
That's not something you use. That's something you show.
Well, they right. used it. They used it this past week, but then they actually handed off on the reverse that one time, or showed the reverse the one time.
But you know what I mean.
But it was a passing game, and that's a run look.
Right. All you want to do is let people know that you've got stuff in your playbook that will stretch you, and they'll
that's
respect it.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's that, Dave?
When's the last time we had a play like that, a signature play that the Jaguars had that could do something like that?
I can remember.
I wouldn't call that a signature play, though.
But it's effective. I mean, it's been effective.
Yeah, but it's a, but that's not a calling card type play.
Yeah,
calling card type play is the one where you line up and you say, "Guess what? We're running this. Stop
right.
it."
Bingo.
And you can the opponent can't.
The old lead draw with Emmitt Smith, the Cowboys. The Cowboys lead draw. That's a signature play. Option right pass, which was the San Francisco 49ers calling card play. Under Bill Walsh, that was the one where Montana hit Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone. You know, where you're rolling out to the right and you've got the option runner pass. You know, the Steelers and their trap, the trapping game. They were going to run the trap in the 70s. That was their signature play. What you're talking about is the cherry on top. You're talking about dessert. You're talking about a little wrinkle that lets somebody know, I've got this in my playbook,
but,
and you're going to have to prepare for it.
But you have to have something signature to have the wrinkles.
What is this team's signature on
offense? Signature on for this football team is Maurice Drew.
Up the middle.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Because you watch the tape, and when Maurice is on the field, where he goes, you watch 11 guys go.
Right. He tilts the field.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think what Dirk has done is that he's recognized that,
mm-hmm.
and he's built plays off of all of the attention that teams are giving Maurice Drew.
Absolutely.
And I think that's brilliant. You know, the reverse actions, the quarterback keeper that they ran in Houston, a naked bootleg where he fakes the toss mm-hmm. to Maurice Drew. I mean, all those things are working because teams understand how dangerous Maurice Drew can be.
The thing I like about what Mike Thomas has given the Jaguars in the way of speed to the outside is that every time now you run him behind the backfield, run him across the field. Every time you show that action, they got to respect it. He may not be getting the ball. It may just be a simple dive play to Maurice Jones-Drew. But if he's running across the back of the backfield, those linebackers have to hold their position. They cannot dive inside.
What I'm looking forward to this week, because in Houston we saw Zach Miller play special teams, and then we saw his role somewhat expanded this past Sunday against Tennessee, where he had the underneath handoff on that third and short.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him catch a couple pass.
Yeah, a
little screen pass. I think that there's, much like what we've seen with Mike Thomas, with the package for him, I think there's another package kind of on the shelf that's getting pulled down in bits and pieces. And I think we're going to see more of that this week in Seattle.
355-NFL1. Let's grab Parker in Mandarin. Hello, Parker.
Brian, we miss your face on TV, but we know you're doing otherwise well.
What's on your mind?
Quick question for you. Historically, the Jags, in my opinion, have struggled, really just struggled, in the sense they upset or beat the teams that they're not supposed to beat, and then they struggle or lose against the teams that they're supposed to beat. And the question is who on this roster can change that from a leadership standpoint?
The one thing, though, that and a lot of people kind of bring that up sometimes, and sometimes it's the case, sometimes it's not. But the one thing that is so unique about the National Football League, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very few teams don't have games that people look at and go, gosh, they should have beat them.
Yeah, there's also another reason, though. This is not a team. Jacksonville is not a name other teams target. You know, I mean, this isn't a team that comes with a name like the Green Bay Packers or the Chicago Bears. I mean, this is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I really do believe in their history they have sneaked up on a lot of teams.
Well, you can point to a couple in particular. Buffalo.
This is not a team that you circle on the schedule. There are those teams that you know when Notre Dame is on your schedule, even if they're stinky, you circle.
You're writing down a W.
You may be writing a W, but you circle them. You circle them. Those gold helmets are coming into town, and they're gonna have your full attention.
Appreciate the phone call. 355-NFL-1. Leopold calls every week. Leopold, what you got for us besides the letter?
Man. I got a three-part question.
This sounds promising.
Mike Sims-Walker, I've been reading about him on all the NFL websites and looking at him on the TV show on NFL Network, and everybody's praising him.
Mm-hmm.
So my three-part question is this. How do you evaluate his performance this season? What is his impact on the football field as far as an offensive standpoint? And in the future, would Dirk Cutter start to feature him on offense? Thank you.
Jeff,
thank you. I mean, I think that's happening right now.
He's doing well.
I mean,
19 catches.
It's easy to evaluate. To me, that's probably the easiest position in the world to evaluate. Show me the numbers.
You either catch it or you don't.
Yeah. I mean, and Mike Sims-Walker is catching it,
mm-hmm.
making tough catches, although that one in the end zone is, you know, I still think that one's going to get a little attention from Mike Pereira this week. Maybe
why?
On
talk
network.
About why.
They've made a big emphasis in that you have to carry catch to the ground.
Yeah, but he took a step. He was running with the ball.
Yeah, but the steps don't matter anymore. It's about making a football move or carrying the ball to the ground.
What's Joe saying?
Oh, they do. I said that to you when it happened, and you didn't believe me then during the game.
You said he took three steps. He took two.
It doesn't matter. I said he took two steps. The ref even said he took three.
Yeah, and the ref was wrong because the third foot never hit the ground when he gained possession.
Yes, it did. He was going down that back foot.
He got 2 foot down and took a step. That's 3 feet.
Hitting the ground had nothing to do with that play. He caught the ball in the end zone. It was a touchdown.
Yeah, but see,
whether he fell down or not, but, had nothing to do with
but
it.
But see, that's not the way the rules are, Joe.
My understanding,
Jeff. 2 feet down don't make a catch.
No, you're right. My understanding
is,
wait a minute, Joe,
okay,
wait a minute.
So that doesn't really apply here.
My understanding is that if he catches the ball, gets 2 feet down, and then goes to the ground, he's got to control the ball through the ground.
Through the ground.
Okay, but in this case, he got 2 feet down and then took a step, a full step. And then went to the ground and lost the ball. And what the official was saying is once he took that step, it was a touchdown because he was now in the process of running with the ball.
I still don't get the third step.
Well, that's what I saw. I saw clearly a third step or a first step after 2 feet.
So the third
down.
Step was the football move.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen the tape, so I don't know.
Let's see
what he did.
When's Pereira do his thing? Tonight, right?
I think it is tonight on the NFL Network.
Let's see what Pereira does.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. You know, because I'd like to know. You know, I really thought that they were going to say, you know, no catch and leave it that way.
I lost my guy, Blandino. He's gone.
Where's he now?
I think he's in
your inside source.
Yeah, I think he's in that Renegade League.
They probably fired him because he was leaking too much to you.
By the way, what is a Florida Tusker? What's a Tusker? That's what the team in Orlando is calling itself.
I don't know.
Tusker. What team?
The team in Orlando in that Renegade League.
It's UFL.
It's going to be the Tuskers.
Jimmy Haslett's that's his team, right?
Yep.
What's a Tusker?
I don't know. Maybe it's like a wild boar or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, well, that makes sense. You would know.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.